Welcome to No Ordinary Life, a podcast by Darko. I'm your host, Josh Monk. For this year's second episode, I sat down with a pretty special guy. His name is Alan Mandel, and he might be best known for his incredible freeriding talent. However, as you move through this podcast with us, you'll come to learn that not only does he have an incredible amount of ambition in all of his exploits, but also a passion to match. Whether it be hitting insanely huge gaps, building said gaps, organizing freeride events in South America, turning his trail building passion into a company, and so much more, there is no question that there is a bright and blazing fire in his belly. In this chat, we dove into a ton of subjects. Alan takes us through his journey through South America, including spending time with a Peruvian tribe in the jungle, and effectively selling everything he had to make the trip there. He also gives us an insight into Todo o Nada, his freeride festival based in Chile, where his goal is to bridge the gap between stardom and grassroots riders, whilst providing a world-class, oversized freeride line. We also get a glimpse of what he does in his spare time, as well as what his goals and dreams are with his company, Trailco. Alan has an infectious energy, and we had never spoken to each other before this podcast, but within seconds, I'm confident in saying that we both felt incredibly comfortable, and as if we were two good friends catching up. I hope that you feel the same way when listening to this. Enjoy.
Is this going to work for us, or is it going to be another pain in the butt?
Yo!
Hey!
Wait a second. Yeah!
God, it feels good sometimes, I swear to... It's sad, the shit that you get excited about as you get older, right? Like, it's just sad.
No. It's the little things in life, you know?
It's true. It's the small battles. But how are you going, man?
Dude, I'm doing super well, man. I'm just chilling now here in beautiful British Columbia. And yeah. How about yourself? Nice.
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. It's a little bit cold today in the Netherlands, but it could be worse. It could very much be worse. But so you're back in BC at the moment. It's nice, but you've been all over the world, it feels like. Just everywhere. I mean, start with Freeride Fiesta, right? So that's where you were. What was that, 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago? I don't know exactly the timeline.
Yeah. Coming up on to almost 3 weeks ago, I think. So Freeride Fiesta was wild, crazy week with all the boys. It's super cool to see my buddy Johnny Salito grow that thing into like what it is, and see that event just becoming more of a staple in the year. And catching up with all the Euros and stuff was just super cool, because it's kind of crazy going back to events now, with COVID and everything. A lot of these things just kind of got delayed, and so it's been a couple of years since you've seen everybody, and it's like you've seen what people are doing on the gram, but it's not the same as like actually connecting in person. So it's wild. Everybody's like, oh, I've been seeing all the stuff that you're up to, and you're like, oh yeah, like I've been seeing your stuff. But yeah, it was great.
That's really cool, man. And you're right, it's like it's really cool to see the development of things like that, you know, like Straight Acres, for instance. It just started in the back of Kyle and Rach's place, and then of course it's grown into what it is now. And then same with Freeride Fiesta, and we'll get to Todo o Nada in a second. But it must be really funny as well, because of course you're interacting with people in a virtual space, and these are your friends from across the world that you haven't seen in a while. But not only do you get to interact with them in a physical way, but then you also get to see them level up from 2 years ago to what they're doing now. And of course, like when you're close to them in person, you're like, oh, they've been doing that, they've been working on it for a couple of years. But right, like how does it feel to look at these, you know, look at your peers, I suppose, and go, oh, they can do that and more now, and I didn't really get to see in real life the progression.
Totally. And I mean, I think that's the coolest part, like especially in Mexico. There's a kind of a small crew of some of my close friends from the Air Rec Center and like the Lower Mainland and in BC that were all down at the event. And some of these guys, like Chance Moore, I taught him how to do his first backflip at the Air Rec Center when I worked there. And you know, I'm like teaching him how to like do the simple mechanics of these things. And now I'm seeing him doing flip whips on like 180 mil bikes and doing like front flip bar spins, crazy like cork seven. Like I'm just, and him and his buddy, like Ben Thompson, is another shredder from BC. And so like, and just seeing the boys, like how solid they are on the bike. They just look like one of the other top riders, you know? So I was just blown away. And but it's cool, like they also mirror that back to me and they're like, dude, you just like put on this international event and like are riding these jumps now with like all the boys. And I'm like, fuck it. Yeah, it is crazy, you know, like it's easy to forget like how much you've come in a couple of years. And so I think that kind of goes to say for everybody, and this couple of years was unique for sure, and I think it made a lot of people reflect and grow more as a person than just any other couple of years in life.
Yeah, I don't think I could say it any better myself, to be honest. It's really just, yeah, that's exactly it. People have kind of had the time to focus on what they want to, you know, what they want to improve if they have the opportunity, I suppose, because of course some people could not based on where they were or what access they had. But let's talk about, you know, your big festival, Toto Anata. For those who are not familiar with it, first of all, can you please explain what was going on, what's it all about, and of course what your involvement is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we'll just start with, this whole thing is so completely random that it even happened in the first place. But 3 years ago, I built these jumps. It was supposed to be for a film project, and COVID hit, project got canceled. We were left with these massive jumps that were built for Andreu. And so we built them huge, thinking like, oh, Andre Lacondigi, like they need to be gnarly and big. And and then fast forward like a couple of years later, nothing's happening. So I end up filming a video called Once in Chile on the jumps with Louis Lacondigi, gains all this attention. Jumps became really famous, and they became the like known as the largest jumps in South America. And then everybody's like, when's the event? When's the event? So like, I just got kind of pushed into like creating an event, because I was like, oh, if we're going to do an event, like we got to do this thing proper. Like we have such a unique opportunity. So my whole vision for this thing from the beginning, I guess I kind of just got put into the role of it, and being kind of the guy that created the idea in the first place to build these jumps there. Like I've just been kind of taking input and trying to listen to the people. And like, so being a rider for, 10, 15 years now, it's like I did slope style for 7 years, and going to slope comps and seeing the events, listening to the riders, like I've heard what people want from events. And so we wanted to like a week long session, super chill, completely about the locals, completely about opportunity, bringing the industry to South America instead of them having to save up all this money to get a plane ticket to hopefully maybe get noticed. We're going to just bring everybody to them because they're awesome and they have a really cool scene. So this event was the first ever thing like this ever to happen in South America. And people treated it like crankworks. Like people drove 12 hours just to come watch us for a 2-hour session in the morning. Like we didn't promote it. Like people woke up at 3 a.m., rode their bikes from the city to come watch. It was magical. And like some of the riders, we took 10 locals that we invited. And then we had three others that were part of this locals day that we did as a qualifier the day before the event. And so we took three of those to continue riding the rest of the week with us. And like one of those kids ended up doing a double backflip, got himself like a brand new bike. The owner of the bike park offered him a job and housing, and was just like, I want this kid to do well, and I'm going to fully support him. Completely changed this kid's life, and he auctioned his other bike off in his hometown in Southern Argentina to get a bus ticket to take a 15-hour bus ride to the qualifier in hopes to ride with us that next week. And then ends up like slaying it, throwing this double flip. Like all the pros were like, who the hell is this guy? And like, just, and that's like what we wanted to create, you know. And that Ian Pitano, and he he's just like one example of many of like how special the whole thing was. And now everybody's like, Toto Anata, like next year it's going even bigger, like, yeah. And I'm like, holy cow, we just created something wild. Not like the rider list internationally that we had there was wild, because I've dug at Rampage for 7 years, So I've built this like relationship with all these riders as friends, not just like, oh, you're a top rider and like whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just like, so through the years, I was able to have a couple awesome guys like Kurt Sorge, Alex Volokov, like Andreu, Brandon Semenuk, Ryan Howard, a couple new guys like Dakota and wow. Ryan McNulty were there, top boys. So it was just a stacked, super heavy rider list internationally, and then badasses locally, and then a bunch of spectators and inspiration. And so that's a lot, but
cool. man, that's so cool. I love what you said in the beginning, just about the fact that, you know, it's a big task, or it's a big request to get people from South America to go to, whether it's Canada or Europe or something, to make a name for themselves, and to, you know, to be able to reach out, also to be able to reach those heights. So the fact that you've brought it to this area where it's obviously easier for them to access it, not only just get there and attend it, but compete in it, and then also talk with these, you know, Avengers level mountain bikers that you've made friends with and that you brought across the world. Like that's a really cool thing. And I think that, you know, the access that you've created between, let's just say, the everyday mountain biker, I guess obviously they're at like a really high level, they're not just a weekend warrior, but you know, the people who are kind of, I guess they are at a level that those top of the world athletes were once at, you've created that bridge. And that's such a cool thing. When it comes to event creating and organizing, I mean, it sounds like you just kind of get swept up in the hype of this. So did you have any help when it came to actually organizing an event and then getting everything sorted? Like, who did you lean on for that? Because of course I can imagine that's a big task.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we had Louise Hatton, and she is the event mom for a lot of these events. And she helped Tom Van Steenberg with his big white slopestyle event. And mm-hmm. she was part of Rampage for years and does Casey Brown's Dark Horse. But she's the plug and play person. Like I ran into her at Tom's event a couple years ago, and I saw her right after I got back from this trip, and she's like, Alan, I want to come to Chile. Like, I'm seeing all these photos, like, what the hell's going on down there? And I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's we've got some momentum. I'm like, actually, like, I need someone like you. I'm trying to create this event. And she's like, oh, and like, let me know what you need. And I mean, I gotta say, like, really, this whole project from the get-go, it's just been this way. Like, it's been such a beautiful thing to witness, just like the universe provides you exactly what you need only when you need it. It's not a second before, it's not a second after, it's right in the moment. And like, people have shown up right when I was like, I don't know how we're gonna do this, like, we need somebody. And then somebody like arrives, and they're like, hey, I have the skill sets you're looking for, and I'm also an awesome person, and let me help you out.
is this fake? Yeah, it's like, are you pranking me?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been on your... So yeah, like, Louise helped me with the organization. I actually did go to university for mountain biking. There was a mountain bike program at Capilano University in Canada. And in that program, event organizing was one of the courses. So I've had a little bit of experience doing small scale events and mm-hmm. kind of understand the gist of it, being around it. And then it helped a lot, like this previous formation, Red Bull formation. I helped the H5 crew set up and tear down the event for that. And so I got right. to like be a little bit more behind the scenes and see how much like logistics go into planning and setting up things. And but yeah, it was a huge learning curve, like just going from being a jump builder, trail builder guy, and then just like, okay, yeah, I think I know what people want, to actually making it happen. So
and did you get, like, when you were at Rampage, when you were building, of course, did you take the time to kind of switch your mentality to looking around and seeing what you could learn from I guess that kind of event as well, looking at what people were doing to keep that thing running? Or was it mainly just, let's focus on getting the best line possible?
Yeah, and I think for me it's been more of like a subliminal, like, subconscious learning from Rampage, sense that like I'm just around it. So I'm like, I just started making more notes about like, oh, it's really nice that they have snacks for us whenever we're hungry, or like, it's really nice that they have this water station here so you don't have to go all the way back. And in a way, where the event location is in Chile, Pete's Park, it's kind of similar distance from like the base of Rampage to where you're riding. Because like Pete's Park is 100-acre property, and it's like big cabins and whole central location like in the middle of the park, but the hill is like you know, on the other side of the 50 acres. So it's like you take a little moto or you drive a vehicle out there and shuttle it, but it's just far enough that if you forgot something, it's kind of annoying to like pedal back. And so we like made sure we had kind of a out there, and then just support crews like the whole time, and making sure like the course was watered in the morning and evenings. And so the way we ran the event was just mainly like, okay, riders don't want to ride bikes all day, like every single day. Like, I mean, they do, but they want to ride for like a couple hours and then chill for a bit. Like that's, they're not literally going to ride 8 hours a day or 10 hours a day. So we just would water the jumps in the morning and be like, okay, so morning sessions a go if you want. And then in the afternoon, like midday, we would have, they have these things like go-karts, but they have street bike engines in them and like really good suspension. So they're called car cross, but they go super fast, and they're like what everybody dreams of wanting to do in a go-kart. But they on a dirt racetrack, and the owner of the parks built this whole racetrack that's got like 20-foot berms, and like every corner is like bowled out so you can't fly out of it. So it'd be like, okay, go ride bikes. And then like, if you want to go rip these cars around, like it's open like every morning, like kind of evening. And then it was like, and if you're bored, there's like a pool house, so there's like a pool to chill at. If you want to go rip like pit bikes, there's a pit bike track, or there's a full-size moto track. If there's like, if you want to grab the 250 or the 450, like there's just motos kicking around. And then it was like, oh, and there's also like all these dirt jumps and a huge pump track and like dirt jump trails. So it's like, literally, if you want to go mess around on the hardtail, like go grab a hardtail. And so it was like, lunch is at this time, come eat when you want to eat. And so it's just wow, like really like dream week for everybody, because it's like, yeah, like we got like a variety of things to do, so it kept it fresh, it kept it fun. And then the entire team, like entire time, we just had our media team running around capturing what everybody was up to, filming all sorts of crazy stuff. And yeah, and then like on Thursday during the week, we went skydiving because I wanted to switch it up and just do something sweet that's like, you know, gets people outside their comfort zone a little bit. And yeah, the owner of the park recently just got skydiving, so it was just like, yeah, let's do that. And yeah, it was awesome.
I'm in the wrong country. I'm in the wrong country for sure. Why am I here? Holy crap, that sounds like a lot of fun. I mean, just because, you know, all these motorbikes and pools and riding bikes at a ridiculous level is not enough. You decide to throw skydiving into the mix just to switch it up a little bit. Like, okay, yeah. All right, I'll see you there next time for sure. Yeah, that sounds like you've...
yeah.
Sounds like you had a pretty good time, to put it simply. But I mean, I guess for you personally, of course, like you would have gotten to the end of it. Everyone would have gone home and it's all done and dusted. What were the feelings that you had? I mean, was it contentment? Was it pride? Like, how did you feel when it was just all finished and you kind of had a moment to reflect? Like, what were the big feelings that kind of came out that you recognized after?
So it was kind of weird because it was a little bit delayed. I went from event organizer straight onto the plane and then straight to Mexico. And I showed up at Fiesta like next day and straight to being a rider. And then I was like, like back and just enjoy this, and just had fun on the bike and just kind of switched to rider mentality. But when I got back after Mexico, I flew to my parents' house in Wyoming. And once I got back to Wyoming, I finally had like a week of just me time and actually able to like process what just happened. And that was pretty special to just like sit with everything, kind of reflect on it all. And I'd say, honestly, if it comes down to just one word, it's like gratitude. I was just filled with an immense amount of gratitude for just, because as I started like having some time to like just have a few days to myself, and then I like got back on the social media and I started scrolling through all of the Toto Inada posts that were tagged, and that's what really hit me. Like, I wasn't ready for that. Like, I kind of was just, you know, tunnel vision, trying to make this thing as best as it could be and making sure everybody just had a great experience. And that was like my number one goal, is just to like create an awesome experience for everybody. And then like the aftermath and like the effects of that is just so many hundreds of people that were so deeply touched and like saying like that was the best week of their life, and that like this is like monumental for Chile, that what has happened here is like forever changed Chile and like South America.
Wow.
So just like some pretty profound statements were being made about what we did, and for us, we're just trying to make something cool, you know. and to see like how it's interpreted by people was just, it was so special. And so I'm just extremely grateful for that country and for all the people there, and especially for Pete's Park and Pablo, the owner, for just letting me have the opportunity to do everything that I've done there. So
wow, that's really cool, man. I'm so happy for you that you got to experience and kind of recognize all those feelings at the end of that. That must have been very fulfilling.
Yeah, extremely fulfilling. Yeah. Thank you.
No, thank you. I think of course this has to happen again. I'm sure there are lots of people asking, it has to happen again or every year or anything like that. Do you feel pressure to deliver and like potentially do better or do the same? Is there any kind of pressure that you've kind of felt has come on as a result of how well this has gone?
Yes and no. I feel like it's not so much pressure that I feel as much as it is just excitement. because for me, like a lot of people met me once I lived in BC, because I've been in BC for the last like 10 years, but I was grinding for like 6 or 7 years on my own in Wyoming before that. And that's where I grew up, in a super small town in the middle of Wyoming. So like around a lot of ranchers and outdoor enthusiasts, mountaineers, climbers, but nobody was mountain biking. So like when I went to Chile and I saw the opportunity and they were just like, yeah, build whatever you want, like literally, like we're so excited about what you can create here. So just like, yeah, I've met owners of the bike parks there, and people are like, we want you to build trails and do things like you've done at Pete's Park here. And so it's to me, it's like there's so much opportunity to grow this thing into something unique. And I relate a lot to the Chilean people or to anybody who's like coming from a place where they don't really have much to be able to like walk through that door into the industry. If they have to climb an entire like ladder just to get to the first level to start, it's like, I can relate to that. So, so for me, it's like, I've been working my way up this whole, like, you know, this huge tower of trying to climb, like getting into a bike career for most of my life. And trail building was just a means to an end, in a way that I could be in the industry and be around building and riding and testing. But for me, it's like, I still want to be a rider and I still want to ride big jumps, and big jumps is like now kind of my thing that I'm really loving, trail building. And now I'm like getting invited to things. And so, yeah, with this Toto Inada, it's like, there's pressure to do it again, but for me it just kind of feels very organic and natural that like it has to be like an annual thing, and it's more or less like an obligation. It doesn't feel like external pressure. It feels like an internal like motivation of like, I need to do this because this is an opportunity to like leave my fingerprint on the industry and do something that could change an entire scene for so many people. And so so for me, like, I just see it like an opportunity to create an event that isn't around disciplines. It's around having fun on two wheels. And, you know, that's something that can be shared universally through different sports, as well as like motos. And like, even with the owner being so into race cars, like the whole like rally world and stuff, like some of his friends are super fascinated with it, and he's got trophy trucks. So the plan is like next year we're going to build a way bigger course, and we're designing it so the owner Pablo can drive his trophy truck on the hill with us, and like we can jump over him, he can jump over us. And I want to make like a choreographed line where there's like moto jumps that are jumping over the mountain bike stuff, like so we have just like huge like 100+ foot jumps for mountain bikes and motos, like have like 100-foot jumps over the hills for motos, like trophy truck jumps, and then there's just a huge spectating area in the field. So I'm like, this thing could go so big and like has enough to like accommodate like thousands of people to spectate, and there's space to do like insane venues of like beer gardens and like have like music and make it like a whole weekend kind of festival thing that's just like opportunity for like locals to be seen, always making it around like making sure that door is open for South Americans to be a part of this event and qualify and be able to ride this stuff with the top riders, because the talent's there. And I see this thing down the road, like, you know, each year it's just like take it one year at a time, but I think like down the road this could turn into like a series, because I have a lot of connections and friends in Peru and Brazil and Ecuador, Colombia, wow. Argentina, Costa Rica. So like all these people have land that are coming to me, and I'm getting messages from people saying like, we have this beautiful 1,000 acres, like look at this, like build something here. And I'm like, this is wild, like this is every builder's dream, is to have free range to creativity flow. And so yeah, I just think that it's like a really unique opportunity that on a continent that really hasn't been explored too much with like established events internationally, like other than just like the urban kind of DRHs and some of the big enduros, but nothing like this. So
yeah, nothing like this, that's for sure. My god, man, I mean that's so cool that you're having people reach out to you, say like, please just build on my land. Like that is really so exciting. And maybe it's just a kind of a snapshot of the fact that there's such a large demographic of people who are starved for the experience that you are aiming to provide. So the fact that these people are, you know, coming out of the woodwork to, you know, to ask you to do these things, to come and, you know, visit their place and build a festival, or build jumps just for them so they can start building their own community. That's so inspiring. And that must be very energizing for you, I think is one way to put it.
Yeah, most definitely. very humbling. I just feel very honored that people like respect like my skill sets and my talents to the point that they're sending me offers and, you know, messages about this stuff, because it's funny, like growing up in Wyoming, I had to build all of the first jumps that I learned how to dirt jump on. So like I watched the drop-in series to learn how to ride bikes, and so I just bought a hardtail from a friend, and I was watching YouTube drop-in series like religiously at the local library. I literally was digging jumps just based on what I saw in videos, and was like trying to figure out how to like make a jump feel good. And then over the years of trial and error, like started figuring it out, started seeing other jumps in different places as I started traveling with my bike. And then, you know, it's just been this like tool that I've had to like you know, continue to grow, to progress my own riding. And now it's like my, it's my whole career, but it's just cool that, that it's to the point where I've done it long enough that I am like helping with the education part now. And I can like do these projects and like work with locals and like explain things and give them the tool sets. And I think that's the coolest part, is like now being in a position to empower others is like really what I'm excited about, because yeah, there's so many people that are so motivated out there that have like so much potential all around them, and they just need a little bit of guidance, a little bit of direction, and be shown a few tricks, and then they're like off to the races. And to me, that's like the coolest thing that we could do as trail builders in the world, is just share these gifts and see how many more incredible trails get built through all of these unique like interpretations of the land that everybody has.
That is outrageously admirable, man. That is so cool. I think it's one thing to be really good at trail building and to know exactly just from, you know, just from eyeballing it that, you know, this jump is going to be perfect, or, you know, this bike park is going to be the most fun bike park, or what, like whatever example. But the fact that you, you know, you want to build, you want to establish, and then you want to pass that knowledge on is very cool. And I think that just provides so many more people with more opportunities. And that's, I mean, obviously mountain biking should 100% be for everyone. And I think you're kind of living through that. And that's really, really cool.
Cheers, man. Appreciate that.
No, it's super sick. So tell me about Chile, because you seem to have quite a special relationship with at least Chile. I mean, maybe South America in general, but of course, Soto Arnado was in Chile. How did that, how do you find yourself resonating with Chile? Because of course you said that, you know, you do find similarities between your hometown and then I guess the people and the communities, but it had to start somewhere. Like, you know, what caught your attention about Chile? Did you go there just on a whim, or did you know that you wanted to travel there before you got there? Like, how did you kind of, I guess, fall in love with the country?
Oh man. So it's actually a story. But in 2018, I broke my ankle extremely bad, a compound tib fib break at the Kamloops bike ranch. And yeah, I got blown by some wind, and I completely overshot the entire landing to flat, and like I got blown sideways. So I landed like kind of in a snowboard position coming down sideways, and my left ankle, it snapped to the outside, and my tibia went into the ground. It broke a chunk of the tibia off, like almost like 4 centimeters. And then it ripped a ligament out, and it shattered my fibula into like 9 pieces, like halfway up my legs. So the surgeons put it all back together as best they could. Then, you know, physio, rehab and everything, all the specialists I was seeing pretty much were just like, dude, you should stop riding bikes. You should stop all high impact activities. Like, they wanted to fuse my ankle, so I would lose all dorsiflexion, like up and down. And yeah, it was a really heavy, traumatic injury to like go through and process, just like on an egoic level, and just like trying to look at what my life looks like without this identity of mountain biking. So like I got kind of stripped from this whole lifestyle that I was like accustomed to, and was like, okay, maybe I'm not going to be able to hike hills the same way or skateboard the same way or do all these things. So finally I'm working with this one ankle specialist, and he just gives it to me straight. He's like, listen, you've gotten your ankle strong, it's completely healed, like there's nothing really that we can do at this point. Like, I would recommend that you go live your life as fully as you can and go for every big physical thing that you've ever wanted to do in your life right now. Don't wait, just do it. So pretty much I just left that with this huge breath of fresh air and all this excitement and nervousness, and just like kind of like, fuck it, like I'm just gonna live my life like how I want to live. I'm just on South America. So I saved up money and I worked for like 6 more months, and then I sold everything I owned, like my vehicle, like bunch of winter gear, like all this stuff, and then I just I packed my bike in a backpack and I flew to Peru. Because I was like, pretty desperate to do like any healing work to try to heal this ankle and heal my body. And I'd been like really becoming like fascinated and called to like holistic medicine. And so the reason that I went to South America was to go to the Peruvian Amazon jungle to go do ayahuasca with the indigenous tribes. So I actually went there on a healing journey for just my ankle and like my own personal journey. And I was like, I'm ready for like whatever comes next. Like if I'm not meant to keep bikes or trail building, like maybe I'm meant to become like a healer or like work with people on like injury recovery or something, like, cause I feel called to that as well. And health has become a really big thing in my life, but I ended up going to Peru first, and I went to the jungle for 10 days and sat and did some ayahuasca ceremonies with the Shipibo tribe. And to summarize that whole experience, cause that's a whole story in its own. I left the jungle with like an overwhelming amount of gratitude for my life. And I just felt extremely lucky to even be alive. And I just felt like everything had happened exactly perfectly. And I understood why. And I had full trust and faith in the future. And I just said, like, from here on, like everything is just bonus. Like none of it, like if I had to just like, if I have to suffer the rest of my life just to have experienced how amazing that first chapter was, like, then that was all worth it. And so I just had this like no expectation, so much gratitude just for being able to exist, and proceeded to like travel about Peru with this like extremely positive energy and just this like just kind of like glowing almost. And I couldn't speak a word of Spanish when I was there. I just like fully wanted to trust fall where I like knew no one, didn't know the language, and just be the observer and just try to like learn and immerse myself in something new and go on a wild adventure. And so through that whole trip in Peru, I ended up going to like Machu Picchu, and I went to like the north to the Huaraz National Park, and I did some backpacking there. I went surfing and ended up meeting the people specialized in Peru and got connected with this whole bike community and filmed this free ride trail bike video in Peru. And ended up building a pump track for Specialized Peru, and that was like the first kind of experience building down there. It was super random, and it was just kind of on a whim. Like after a month traveling around, they were like, hey, could you help us with this pump track? I said yeah, and then I saw like 85 kids line up for the opening of the pump track, and they told me like this was legitimate pump track in like the entire area of Lima, which is 11 million people. And I was like, no, like that can't be, no, like that, wow. Really? And they're like, we've never had anybody build a like legitimate, like we have a BMX racetrack, but it's different. And I was like, yeah, okay, crazy. So that was my first glimpse at like how much further my skill sets go there and how much more they mean to people there. And that was a really special thing, but that was like a week long project, really quick. And then I had plans to go to Chile after that and go to Patagonia. And I was just on this trip to try to do like the whole coastline. And I wanted to go through Argentina up to Brazil. And so I ended up leaving Peru. I went to Chile, and it was again, just like no plan, didn't know anybody really. And first week that I was there, I see on Andreu and Luis Lacondegui's story that they're flying to Chile, and I was like, hey, what are you guys doing here? And they're like, oh, we're going to scope these zones for this film project. Like, it's crazy that you're here. Like, you should join us if you can meet us at this bike event. And so I ended up talking to a bike shop, and this bike shop like found me a ride to this bike event that was like 8 hours away, and I like hitched a ride with this random family. And then I like show up to this bike event, and all of a sudden, like, I see the Lacondegui's, and they get all hyped to see me there. And all these Chileans like see me with the Lacondegui's. So then all of a sudden they're like, oh, it's some crazy gringo. Like, he knows the Lacondegui's. And so then all of a sudden I get swept up into the momentum of their trip. And I go on this crazy couple days riding at this bike park that has this volcano, and we're like riding around with the owners, and they're showing us all these locations for like potential filming spots for Andre. And anyways, he's like, I'm coming back in a month. Like, if you could build some jumps, that would be awesome. And so I go back to Santiago, and one of my friends in Santiago takes me to Pete's Park, where I ended up doing the Toto Nada event. And I get there for the first time. And yeah, once I was at the park, I was like, this place is incredible. Like, what the hell is going on here? And literally 2 days of being at the park, like, the guy that was working on the dirt jumps there just organized a meeting with the owner and me. And all of a sudden I'm like meeting the owner, and he's driving me around in his Ford Raptor. And he's like, yeah, watching videos of Rampage and talking to me about how this is a good opportunity and he would support the project. And then he's like rallying his Raptor around the park, showing me his racetrack and all this crazy shit. And
no,
I was like,
way.
I'm like looking at this whole situation, like, feeling like I'm in a movie most of the time. And and like literally 2 weeks later, like, I'm flying my buddies down and Lewis, and he's literally like paying for us to start building the project. And we start working on the build, and the fourth day into the build, the pandemic hits and the Chilean border got shut, like fully no travelers in or out. And so we ended up getting stuck in Chile for like 3 months. And so we were like in the best place in the world, I think, for probably being in lockdown. And I feel bad because I'm like, God, like, I had so many friends that were just stuck in apartments. And I was like, man, like, if we're going to be in this environment, we better make the absolute most of it and not waste a single day. So like we like woke up at 6:30 every day, like sunrise, and we would jump in the river and like do our cold dips because it was going into fall. Oh, and we would, like, you know, we'd stay disciplined, we'd go work like 10-hour days and like just be out there like still getting after it, still making the most of everything and making these jumps perfect, knowing that we were like weren't even gonna like ride them with the public or session them or like anything. We're just gonna leave them, but we like made everything perfect just so it was like we did our due diligence, spent our time well. And then and then I flew back after finishing the project there. And so that was like the first trip down to South America. And once I was down there, I met all amazing people. I made all these really close friendships. So many people like took me into their homes, and like I spent Christmas with one of my friends' families in Lima, Peru, like a week after meeting them. And like the grandma's giving me like gifts and stuff. Like this is insane. Wow. The love reality that I felt there. And so I just felt like a deep connection with a lot of those people. And and Chile just happened to be the place that kept having more opportunity to bring me back. So in 2020, 2021 winter, I went back down there to the south of Chile near a town called Pucón. And friend has a farm there. And during the pandemic, she built a bike park and she wanted to have a big jump line. So I went down there in December of 2020, and I helped build another big jump line on that property. And then that's when I ended up filming at Pete's Park and filming this whole Once in Chile movie, which was like 6,000 kilometers of driving, like to the south of Chile, to the north of Chile. And we were in from like the Atacama Desert to volcanoes in the south, and bike parks in the middle, and the big jumps at Pete's Park. And that's kind of how I've established so much connection with Chile. And being there in total for like, I guess almost like a year now. Both trips were close to 6 months. So I spent a fair bit of time in that country, and I love it.
Okay, two questions. How's your Spanish, and why have you not moved to Chile yet? Because it sounds like that's actually your real home.
Yeah, see, no, my Spanish is it's pretty bad still. But it's like it's to the point where I can like have conversations, I can bullshit with people, I can ask for everything that I kind of need, and
cool.
It's awesome. Like, it's been a crazy learning experience. And honestly, I might I might end up there one day. Like, I'm still kind of asking myself that same question. It's yeah. like, it's funny because there is so much opportunity, and I do think that South America as a whole, but especially Chile, is gonna be the new frontier in the bike world, just because I think it is actually relatively like easy to access. Like, it's just really like North America almost. Chile is like a very kind of North American version of one of the countries down there. It's, and they've got like a lot of similar amenities. Their hospitals are dialed, like, and the free ride potential is just unreal. And with free riding growing, becoming more of a thing, people doing more trips, that along with all of the bike parks that they already have and how much motivation they have with new bike parks that are going in. Yeah, I definitely feel like it's a place where I could thrive if I just like fully committed to it for a bit. But right now I'm enjoying the endless summer program and bounce back up to BC in the summers or Wyoming. And yeah, just getting to like spread the love everywhere is pretty cool right now. So.
Yeah, no, I love the idea of an endless summer too. That sounds really nice. But I think with you in Chile or even just anywhere in South America, I feel like your prediction for the mountain bike, you know, boom taking place there is definitely a possibility, because, you know, if there is any country or any mountain bike, let's say community slash setting that has someone like you there, then I'm very sure that the boom would take place, you know, because it takes a lot of dedication. And of course, like, I think you very much, you have that, because not many people would have just created such a huge event that you have. So fingers crossed that it does happen. And I have all the confidence in the world that it will.
Dude, thank you. Yeah. I think, it's going to be exciting to see where it all goes.
Yeah, man. It is super exciting. I think a lot of people are watching, and not to put pressure at all, but I think a lot of people are just watching and just are so excited and stoked about that too. So yeah, I think it can only go up. But tell me, because of course, you know, you're doing all this trail building everywhere. Tell me about the Trail Co. Because that's your thing. So please elaborate on that, and then how I guess that kind of ties into everything that you've been doing as well.
Awesome. Yeah. So yeah, like Trail Co. officially became a business this year, and it was like, yeah, I've been building on my own, just doing kind of individual contracting for the last 4 years. And I kind of was like pretty comfortable in that realm, just taking on little projects that I felt comfortable with. And then this last summer in 2022, I was contacted by my hometown in Wyoming, Lander, Wyoming. And the BLM office there, the Bureau of Land Management, which is our public lands in the U.S., mm-hmm. the trails manager contacted me and was like, hey, we have this double black diamond downhill jump trail that we want you to build. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. because it's the guy, when I was 16, I was building jumps in the same exact zone, because I was like, oh, it's public lands, I'm going to go build a jump. I didn't know any better at 16. And that same exact guy was calling me up, and he was like, Alan, you were the only person in town I know that was building jumps out here. Like, you got to go take this down. Like, he was all upset. And now it's like hilarious. Exactly 10 years almost, or I guess more like 12 years later, he's like, yeah, I want to hire you to build jumps out here. So yeah, that was like a pretty special opportunity, and I felt pretty I wanted to be the person to do that. So I moved back home for the summer and mm-hmm. started the business legitimately, and then I needed to hire a crew. And once I was back home, it kind of snowballed. All of a sudden there's a community college in my hometown, and they have an outdoor recreation program, and they were creating a mountain bike program this year. And they asked me to help create and help build like a mini trail network to use as examples for the trail building students to refer to. And they wanted me to help create the curriculum for the program as well. And so me being in a unique situation where I'm the only person from my hometown who's gone to a mountain bike school, and let alone that there was only one mountain bike school in North America for a long time, like I had all of my curriculum and all of that. So I helped them establish this 100 acre property, building like a variety of like flow trails, climbing trails, like multi-use trails. And so I had like a whole crew running that job while I was building this other job for the public lands. And then in the mix of that, this it was like, hey, we want you to rebuild this dirt jump park that you built way back in the day. So when I was in high school, I convinced my community to let me use this chunk of land that they had, and I got all this dirt donated. And when I was 15, I built this this bike park for my community. So it was kind of run down. And so I ended up rebuilding the whole bike park as well. So like in one summer, I went from like, oh, I'll just start the business to do this like one job to like having three jobs, and then like having like approved like six employees and being like off to the races. And so super cool though. But, it wasn't really like intimidating. It didn't feel like I was like doing anything new. It was just a lot more legitimate, and it was a lot more kind of on the line with, you know, legitimate contracts with the government and yeah. Not like just friends. And you're like, yeah, I'll just build you some sweet jumps for this video. It's a little bit different. So I loved it though. It was a great learning curve. And in the mix of that, like split and went to Rampage and then did some building there. And so, yeah, like, the crew is just super supportive, and they're stoked on like helping me and wanting to learn from me. And so it's worked out really good. Just kind of starting to establish like the team and learning like how to establish like a brand image and wanting to do things a little bit differently. So I'm going to be filming every build that we do. I'm going to film videos on it and create content on it, because I just think it's cool to showcase new trails. And and it's, you know, builds my portfolio, it builds also promotion for the communities and helps spread the word through the communities. So so it's cool to be like actually enough of an influence in the industry that like me building in my little hometown can go further than them just getting a new trail. It can also get influence for people to come check it out and help them host things. And they, you know, been talking about wanting to do like little events and stuff like that. So I'm loving it. It's super cool to now have this business going, because that's something that is long term and can continue to grow, and it can continue to create opportunity for people. And now it's like I set it up so Trailco is also, you know, set up to do media projects, filming, and the build management, and then like event organization as well. So kind of everything I'm doing now. So I'm kind of just like setting myself up to be in a position where I can ride at the things I want to ride at, and I can build when I don't have things going on, and I can teach and create opportunity for people to get into like cool projects, and I can help create events and shape the industry and stuff. So,
wow, that is super cool. That's, I can imagine it'd be a little bit. Yeah, as you said, like not so scary, but kind of just like okay, this is legit now. Like, let's actually put our business cap on for a second and go through this process with a bit more maturity, I suppose, or formality, yeah. I think is maybe a better way to describe it. What are your plans for I've just had a complete mind blank. What's the name of the company I just said before?
Oh, what the hell?
Wait. Yeah, sorry, my brain completely switched off. Trailco. I think it's bedtime. What are your plans for Trailco, I guess, for this year, or just at least what is your, you know, what do you have in mind for Trailco in terms of, you know, growing the company? Do you want it to kind of split so people can potentially take ownership of it in different settings, or do you kind of just want to focus on it, you know, in your own little way that you're kind of just developing it slowly and I guess in a relaxed way that kind of symbiotically works with all of your other stuff that you're doing at the moment as well?
Yeah, I think right now I'm just going to keep it growing slow and just trying to establish kind of a really solid kind of core group of guys that are committed to it. Because I have like a rotating crew of people that like are close friends, that are really good builders that are excited to work, but they only have like a couple weeks here, a month here. And that's, you know, like that's been the program I've been on for years. So I get it fully. And it's like, you know, trying to take on enough projects that keep us busy, but allow us to ride our bikes as well. So this year it's looking like I might do another bike park build in Wyoming. And I have like a couple to finish up there, just with spring maintenance and stuff. And then most of the focus on the second half of the year is going to be down in Chile. It sounds like there's a few riders that might be doing some film projects that I might be building down in Chile. And then as well as building the new event course is going to take a couple months to build all these massive jumps down there. So yeah, putting a little bit more focus into that and maybe like doing a little bit more scouting and following through with like checking out some more like new locations to do some new projects in South America, because like I was saying, like there's a lot of people that have reached out and it's just hard to sometimes like make the time down there because you end up getting pretty busy doing all sorts of stuff. So yeah, I think Trailco though, like the grand picture for this whole thing mm-hmm. is actually like so much further than just bikes. And I envision wanting, and it may not be Trailco, maybe something else, but I envision creating a global bike park co-op that has every single farm would have a regenerative farm built into the bike park, and all of the trails would drain water off into the terraced grow beds, and then kids would be riding around their food. And then you could do camps and kids could harvest their food while they're riding and cook their food. And I feel like this is really like my big inspiration that I want to give to the world, is like create a system and start with just one. But like that's kind of the direction I'm going with all this, is use Trailco to like get funds. But then I really want to purchase land so I can build this bike park farm, because I think this model is something that could heal future generations with like our youth being connected to their food and seeing like the cycle of life and like where it comes from, like what it takes to do it, and having more appreciation and gratitude for our food. And I think just simple things like that, reconnecting us with like the source of our things that literally keep us alive. And you know, everybody rides bikes, and bikes are such a great vehicle to like people and connect people to things. And it connects us to nature and outdoors. So I just want to take it one step further and connect it to your life force. And so, yeah, like I envision this global co-op being a system where everything is a full loop system on the farms. So being a global co-op, it creates a full loop system financially, where in the Southern Hemisphere, people could be, you know, riding bikes in our winter in North America, and like then it could help offset the funding and wages for people in the off season, and create opportunity to work abroad and like do more education with trail building schools and working with local communities and establishing networks in different places of the world. So yeah, that's like the big thing I want to do with Trailco, and that's obviously going to require like a massive team of people and all of that, but you can't go 0 to 1,000. So you have to take one step at a time. So I'm just trying to learn how to manage crew and really learn how to build a team and build like the ethics and like the ethos of the company, and really get people to like, you know, that believe in the same vision to be a part of it. Cause I think there's a lot of people out there that are inspired by this and want to do something like this with their life. But yeah, it's just aligning the right people and building the right team. So I'm just going to take it one step at a time until I kind of feel like I've got multiple teams that could manage other stuff. And then, you know, we'll keep growing slowly, but eventually it's just going to be trying to buy really cool properties and turn them into like regenerative farms. make badass bike parks all over.
That is such a cool idea. That is such a damn cool idea, and I can already imagine it as well. I know that there's obviously a big carbon footprint that the mountain bike industry or even just the cycling industry has. So that's like, you can talk about offsetting it, but I mean, just in general, not only is that, you know, good for the environment, what you're proposing, but then also it is so good for the community to be built and then for people to have access to, as you said, just like a hands-on view of, you know, what they're eating and, you know, the actual process is taken to get, you know, food to plate. That's I love stuff like that. I remember when I was, because I studied I did a Bachelor of Criminology and Criminal Justice, and I did youth justice for one unit. And I remember that I wanted to do an essay on sport as a way of youth crime prevention. And one of my case studies that I found was, I can't remember what the initiative is called, but basically it's in Canada, and it's a group that encouraged Indigenous Canadian children who were at risk of offending to join a mountain bike group or this little club. And what happened was they would take them out riding, and they would, you know, give them tools to trail build, and they would give them tools to work on their bike, you know, mechanics and whatnot. And by the end of it, these kids who were at risk of offending had completely diverted from that path of risk, and they basically just enjoyed this little community that they created with their friends. And what was noticed was in this area, I can't remember specifically which province it was, but in this area, the crime rates for these Indigenous youth dropped dramatically, or at least the at-risk rates dropped dramatically. And people were just like, yeah, see, like we knew this was going to happen, because sport, and it's not just sport, but then also sport with community and direction, creates a massive, massive foundation for progression as a person, and also whether it's responsibility or community. So I just, stuff like that, where you use mountain biking as a way to bring people together and create focus on really important things that actually bring like insane benefit to not only individuals' lives, but then the life of a community, is just so cool, man. And I'm so stoked that you're thinking about stuff like that. It's just so cool.
Oh, thank you, man. Yeah, and that's such a cool case study. I think I've heard of that up in Williams Lake, BC, and they've established a really cool trail network using the help of like Indigenous youth and getting them to reconnect with their land. Yeah, I think it's something that excites a lot of people. And like when I started learning a lot about holistic health and learning about just natural systems that exist all around us and how much nature heals, like, I mean, being a mountain biker, like you hit the ground a lot, and and I friends crashing and recovering, and we've all been through crazy big injuries, and that changes you as a person and it humbles you. And I just think that, you know, a lot of these things have been really big teachers for me to learn like how simple things can really be to heal. And it's just almost the process of eliminating and having those spaces where you can just be in a really like tranquil, like peaceful environment that's connected. And I think if you could create that and blend the two worlds a little bit more, like I think people would be into it, because I think it's a funny spectrum that I find myself dancing on, because I'll, you know, also get equally as stoked to go to an event where there's 100-foot jumps and be around crazy stuff, but then at the same time, like I want to go meditate by like a little pond or something and look at a garden.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Man. And that's actually a question I had for you, which was when you're not mountain biking, when you're not building, when you're not creating, you know, these insane jumps, and when you're not thinking about how you can turn Trailco into this beautiful initiative, what do you do, or if you have time to do such a thing? And my first thing was like, maybe he meditates or something, just because of what you told me about how you went, you know, how you went into Peru and into the jungle. So meditation is one thing we've found. What else do you like to do when you're not in your bike, your bike persona per se?
Yeah. I mean, God, I love so many things. But I'd say go-tos like music. I love playing drums. I love trying to learn the acoustic guitar. I also do pottery. And so I'm very like artistic, and I love like sculpting and making things. And so, yeah, just like tinkering on stuff, and but mostly just getting out in nature, man. I just love going on big hikes, or like finding bodies of water to jump in, and any time of year, like I'm into the cold dips and doing Wim Hof stuff. yeah, but like a lot of the time, my schedule is pretty all or nothing, and so it kind of hints the name of the event, Toto and All or Nothing. Like I kind of live by that a little bit, because like my schedule will be like crazy full on for like maybe a month or something, and then I'll schedule in a couple weeks where I'm chilling or I'm doing something different. And so now I'm like on vacation mode. I've got like a couple months to just enjoy. So it's winter time in BC, so I'm, you know, going snowboarding when I can, and I love sleds with my buddies, but I don't have one yet because they're kind of a money pit. But yeah, I mean, yeah, like I was just ice skating the other day, so yeah, like I'm pretty much like I always like to do stuff, and whether it's sliding, walking, rolling, like whatever it is, like I'm usually outside doing something, or else I'm getting creative and making some sort of art.
Oh my god, you're a Swiss Army knife. That's really cool, man. I don't even know how you have the time to, you know, try and learn acoustic guitar while you're doing all this stuff as well. That's so funny. It's like, oh yeah, I've got a spare 2 minutes. I might just pick this guitar up and see how I go. That's such a cack. Look, thank you so much for, you know, for being on this chat, man. I've learned so much from you, more than I, you know, would be able to just from the internet. And I think a lot of people will be really interested from this conversation too, just about your perspective on life and how you want to integrate the community approach into a global scale initiative as well. I mean, that's a very powerful thing for one person to be influenced by and then be encouraged by. So thank you very much for being on this chat and telling me and everyone else about what you've been up to.
Man, well, thank you. Pleasure is all mine. I appreciate you holding the space. I could ramble on about some stories and yeah, man, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
No, it was really cool, man. Episode 2, you're going to take us through your ayahuasca experience. Episode 3, you're going to give us your drumming experience. We can then go up to episode 6 or 7. It'll be good.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Sign me up.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, thank you, Josh.
So, you see what I mean? I know you couldn't see my face during this conversation, but I can promise you that I was essentially smiling from ear to ear for nearly all of it. And, well, so was Alan. He is so deeply in love with mountain biking and what it can bring to not only himself, but also other individuals and communities. He sees scope for accessibility, as well as finding new and innovative ways for people already in the sport to give back to the environment whilst opening up the gates for anyone to join and fall in love with the sport as well. Do yourself a favour, go and follow Alan Mandel on all his social media platforms, check his work with Trail Co, and just keep your eyes on him in general. He's going to do some great things for this sport, and it's going to be inspiring to witness. Thanks for being here for episode 2 of No Ordinary Life. I'm your host, Josh Monk, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.